Traumatic brain injury. You may have heard of it. It's also called concussion or TBI. Most people think about it as something that lands someone in the hospital. But did you know that the majority of cases do not end up in hospitalizations and actually have long-term consequences even if they don't end up in the hospital? Today on Ask Dr. Gill, I want to explore TBI, the statistics, the effects of it, and what you can do about it to help yourself going forward in the future. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I'm Dr. Gill Winkelman, and today on the podcast, I'm actually doing this as a simulcast in a sense. I have slides if you want to check this out on YouTube. I have been doing some of the podcasts as videos so that people can see some of the information that I'm talking about, but I'm going to be describing the majority of this anyway, and in this particular case, it is more of a reference for people than anything else. I've given this talk in various ways over the years, and some of the statistics I have been trying to update, but the data is really fuzzy, and I'll explain parts of that as well. And if you like this podcast, you can subscribe to my channel on YouTube or Apple Podcast, or I think it's on Spotify as well. And for more information, you can go to AskDrGill.com. I have a newsletter. I'm offering courses not on brain injury, but on other information right now. And if there's interest, I actually may do a course on brain injury in terms of what to do and how to get help and so forth. But that hasn't actually come to fruition yet. But if there is interest, please let me know. You can put it in the comments below or send me an email at info@AskDrGill.com. So I want to talk briefly about a patient that I had that came in. This is years ago, and I want to say that she came in October, November timeframe. She'd been in a car accident in January or February of the same year. And after the accident, she started having some gastrointestinal issues, mostly nausea and vomiting. And she went to her primary care doctor. This is before I met her. And they said, well, you're at the age where your gallbladder could be an issue. And she ended up having gallbladder surgery and had the gallbladder removed. Now, no one asked her about the accident. And she didn't think about it because she hadn't hit her head as a result of the accident. And I'm going to talk about why that's not necessarily a factor in this. But in any case, she still felt bad, which is why she came to see me. So it wasn't her gallbladder. And I said, well, was there an accident? She says, yeah, actually, I was in a car accident, but I didn't hit my head. And I did neurofeedback on her, and lo and behold, she got better. Probably, I think it was 6 weeks, and she was 100%, you know, recovered. So before I jump into the why hitting her head isn't important, I do want to talk about the statistics. And worldwide, the numbers are really interesting. So the problem is that most people do not land in the hospital as a result of TBI. So the estimate is there's 65 to 75 million per year worldwide. Now, 1 in 50 people with TBI can develop what's called post-traumatic epilepsy, or PTE. TBI is one of the, if not the leading cause of death and disability worldwide, and I believe in the United States too. But the majority of them are classified as mild, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the long-term effects are mild. It just means that the immediate effects are mild. And that's an important distinction, because TBI can be like almost like I call it a stroke in motion, like where the effects are happening over a long period of time. And I'm going to talk about that in a bit. So in the United States, we have the latest statistics that I've seen are almost 3 million Americans, 2.87 million, are treated and released from ER departments. But the thing is that the number is closer to 56 million per year. That's a lot of TBIs. And I used to say there's one every 23 seconds. That's an old number. It's probably higher than that. And what we're learning is that just because you don't go to the hospital doesn't mean that there aren't effects of this. So we see that there's different risk groups. And what's interesting is that a child is at high risk, so under the age of 5, but also people over 75 are at high risk. And that's because they fall and then they might hit their head. So these are the important things to keep in mind. Now, just to put this perspective for a second in terms of the numbers, I don't want to minimize any of these other conditions, but there were 310,000 cases of breast cancer. I think this was 2021, 43,700 deaths. By the way, that number has gone way up. So the death rate is about the same, but the number of breast cancer rates has risen since the first time I did this lecture, I want to say in 2010. And it's almost doubled in that time. So that was kind of an interesting thing in my mind. But when you add in breast cancer, multiple sclerosis, HIV, spinal cord injuries, they combine to total 375,000. Now, there's at least 2.5 million people in the United States who experience TBI every year. And it's, like I said, it's probably higher. And 80,000 of those people end up with long-term disabilities, 50,000 die. But what's going on with the rest? I mean, when you look at this, it's like, okay, there's over 2 million people that are having long-term issues because of TBI. Now, of course, some of these people recover, they don't have any problems. But we do find that lots of these people end up with other problems. They make bad choices, they forget things, they start being unable to find their way around town. They are having long-term fatigue issues, mood issues, troubles relating to people. And I'm gonna go through all of the different effects, but I think it's important to recognize that just because it's considered a mild TBI, that doesn't necessarily mean that the long-term issues are mild. And so why does this happen? So part of this is that people have issues because they don't get treatment because they say, well, I didn't hit my head. And here's the thing. Your head is like a bowling ball balanced on a broomstick because our necks are fairly narrow relative to the size of our skull. And it's interesting because if you look at it, our head is kind of wiggling on this stick sitting on our shoulders. And it's kind of a weird experience. And obviously some people have bigger necks than others, right? So when I look at the brain, you know, in terms of its consistency, it's that of, I would say, jello more than a raw egg. And the skull is the consistency of a brick wall. So when you look at this, you've got something that's relatively soft slamming into something. And I do have a little video that I have here, if you're watching this on YouTube, where it shows the brain slogging inside the skull. And so when we have a whiplash injury, we kind of go forward and then come back. Well, our brain is actually getting slammed because it's at high speed, right? It's getting slammed into the front of the skull and then comes back and hits the back of the skull. That's called a contrecoup injury, by the way. But the details of that are less important is understanding that that can cause damage in the brain. And the other piece to this is that it can also work on the brainstem. So our heads, our brains, are actually three parts. So we've got our cortex up on the top, we've got our midbrain, which can deal with emotional issues and balance issues in terms of that, and then the brainstem, which is kind of at the top of the spinal cord, if you will. That's where all the nerves, if you listen to my podcast about polyvagal theory, I don't go much into the details of the physiology and that, but one of the things to keep in mind is that the brainstem has all of these cranial nerves, and that can get damaged or be affected by a TBI, and that's going to have other long-term consequences as well. So we can see lots of changes that happen in thinking, sensation, language, emotions, etc. And there is evidence to suggest that TBI may be a prerequisite. And I say this carefully because it doesn't mean, oh, if someone has a TBI, they're going to get Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. But it could be that that will lead to it given other conditions and effects. So let's talk a little bit about the effects of TBI. And I have this graphic. It's on my website, and there's a blog post about TBI if you want to take a closer look at this. But I'm going to go through all of the issues. So, you know, generally speaking, the main issues that we see with TBI, long-term sequelae, long-term effects of a TBI, is headache and or neck pain, including migraines, by the way, difficulty paying attention, we get ADD issues, concentration issues, memory, executive function problems, we can't make decisions, difficulty with reading, thinking, speaking, can get easily lost or confused, low energy or motivation, libido can go up or down, change in sleep habits, changes in appetite, dizziness or lightheadedness, loss of taste or smell, ringing in the ears, and mood changes. Those are the main things that happen. And what we can see is that this can happen over time. It doesn't necessarily happen right away. So I'm going to take a quick break, and at the next half of the show, I want to talk more in detail about the effects of the TBI and what you can do about it. So stay tuned. Hello, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Gill. I'm Dr. Gill Winkleman, and today we've been talking about TBI and the effects of it on our bodies and minds and so forth. I just wanted to remind you, if you need more information about this, you can check out my website, askdrgill.com, and I have more information on there as well. So, all right, so what happens with the physical effects with the TBI? And one of the things that is I want to reiterate is that this happens over time. So you get into an accident, let's say, and you don't even think about it. You know, you or you hit your head, sports injury, whatever it is. You keep going. And sometimes that happens, by the way, as a survival mechanism. If you are in a battle, as an example, and TBI is super common in the military, by the way. So you're battling. You do not want to take time to grab your head. I mean, this is not soccer. I was just watching the Olympic soccer, and it's amazing to me watching these guys with like tattoos all over their body. You know, they get tapped and they fall on the ground and writhe as if someone shot them in the leg. And that's part of the culture of playing soccer or football if you're not in the United States. But when you're in battle, or if you're like living life in the world, you're trying to survive. And part of our survival mechanism is churning off that pain response and that shock response so that we can go, that we keep going. And it's not that you're not in shock physically, it's that you just are like, all right, I need to keep going because this is how I'm going to survive. And that may be part of the issue of this this TBI effect. And what I've seen is it can be 6 to 18 months after an injury that someone notices that they start to have problems. Now, it doesn't have to be. Some people notice it right away. And I've had people come to me and say, oh yeah, I knew something was off as soon as that happened, you know. So what's going on here? Well, there's a number of things that can go on. I talked about sensory loss, loss of smell, loss of hearing, loss of taste, loss of motor control or coordination. That can be because it's affecting sense of balance. If it affects the brainstem asymmetrically, you could like feel, you could list to one side versus the other. You can get bladder and bowel changes. Some people become incontinent. They lose control of their ability to manage bodily functions. Fatigue is a big issue. Headaches, including migraines. Heart issues is a really interesting one. I've been looking at the research on this, and this is probably related to sympathetic nervous system tone. And so we see people start to have accelerated heart rates for no reason. And so it's almost like the body's sympathetic tone gets imbalanced. It doesn't know how to shut off. And then finally, you can see various issues related to the pituitary gland. So you can have hypo, meaning low, or hyper, meaning high. And this can affect various things in the body. Adrenaline, cortisol as well, but also thyroid. And I've seen a number of cases of thyroid problems that show up post-TBI. And it's not that their thyroid has a problem, it's that their pituitary does. So, emotional effects, this is probably the biggest one that we see. As I mentioned, changes in libido, but people become impaired in social judgment. They might increase their risk-taking, indifference to others, anxiety, depression, loss of motivation. There's the classic case, and if you've taken a psychology class, it's the case of Phineas Gage. He had a railroad spike. This was back in the 1800s. He was working on the railroad in the Western United States, and he had a railroad spike go right through his head. And they thought, oh, he's dead for sure. So they ended up removing the spike, and he had a complete personality change. He was a law-abiding, very religious man, upstanding citizen, and he became an alcoholic, womanizing, no social skills whatsoever, just did impaired judgment in different things, and basically was a completely different person as a result of this. That's an extreme case, by the way, but it shows how our brains aren't necessarily about survival. They're about our ability to interact with the world as well, which is really interesting. And then cognitive effects, this is a big one, obviously, and it may be why there's so much attention deficit issues in our youth, and because it could have to do with sports. And we do see grades drop after TBI in studies. If there's someone who's had a sports injury, their grades can drop as a result of that. And it's their brains just aren't working as well as they were hoping. And so this is a very important piece, I think, of understanding problems. So if you have a kid who's doing well in school and all of a sudden isn't, it may be time to treat that person, that child, for TBI, even if you or he or she cannot remember a particular event, because sometimes you don't remember a particular event. And it's interesting, you know, not everyone who has a blow to the head has TBI issues, you know, either long term. There's different contributing factors. Some of this is genetics, and some of it has to do with the strength of your neck, right? But here's something that was interesting. When I was studying this in school, we said that if you have a TBI, you're at double the risk of a second TBI. And if you have two TBIs, you're 8 times the risk of a third. So it's exponential. But what their new research is showing is that in children, if they have a TBI, they're at 4 times the risk of a second TBI. So This is important to recognize if your child is playing sports and you know they had a TBI. You want to get them evaluated. You want to make sure that they are getting the proper care before they go back out there. Because the second, there's other risk involved with this. And I have a personal experience. I was surfing a couple days ago, actually, and got hit in the head with my own board. It was kind of stupid. But I'm fine, fortunately. But I knew after I got hit, I had the wherewithal to say, all right, I need to get back in. Be careful because I might be at higher risk of getting hit again. And sure enough, I got a little wave to keep going back in, fell off my board, and the board went straight up in the air. And fortunately, I stayed underwater, but I saw the board coming straight down right back at me like a missile. And it didn't hit me, fortunately, but at least I knew, yeah, this is a possibility. We tend to be more accident prone, if you will. And I've seen this with patients that, you know, they get into a car accident and within a year they've had five more car accidents. And this is part of it. Some of that has to do with your inability to make good choices, and you pull out, you don't look, whatever it is. Some of it is something we don't really understand. And so it's just, you know, bad kismet, if you will. So this is kind of the piece about it. Now, if you have had a TBI, the main things to do is to rest. You want to eat well. You want to avoid alcohol and drugs. Pharmaceuticals, if they're prescribed, can be helpful potentially. I will say, as far as I know, there is no pharmaceutical that is really good at healing the brain. And from a nutrient perspective, zinc, magnesium, vitamin D. Vitamin D gets used up as a result of TBIs. Now, something that can happen that I forgot to mention earlier with people is when we have a TBI, because the brain has its own immune system, that gets activated and it starts to go and it creates this inflammatory cascade so that our bodies can heal, our brains can heal. Now, the body has an immune system, and we don't want that immune system to be affecting the brain because our white cells actually kill neurons. So that's the purpose. That's one of the purposes of the blood-brain barrier. Now, here's the thing that's interesting. When there's a brain injury, the blood-brain barrier breaks down, but breaks down from the standpoint that stuff from the brain comes into the body. So we start to get this inflammatory cascade happening as a result of this. And the body's like, where is this coming from? And it started attacking itself. So there is a connection potentially between TBI and autoimmune diseases that show up. And so vitamin D is an important piece of this because it seems to help. First of all, it gets used up after a brain injury, but it seems to help turn this inflammatory response off. And so vitamin D, zinc, magnesium are a big piece of this. Another thing I highly recommend is don't make any big decisions after you've had a brain injury. And I have seen people do this. They start dating someone, they get married all of a sudden, and then they're like, you know, after they get treatment, they're like, what was I thinking? So that does happen. And neurofeedback, which I will do a podcast on. I have an old podcast about it, but I think I'll do one with a video as well. Neurofeedback is a really, really important piece of helping brain injury because it's really a direct way that we can help the brain heal itself. So the brain will heal in many cases on its own, and it's not necessary to necessarily have neurofeedback. And you know, this is something that's a debate in the neurofeedback community. Do you treat someone right away or do you wait? And I don't think there's a right answer, by the way. But I do think that it is one of the best uses of the technology is to treat TBI. So I hope you really enjoyed this. And if you liked it, please follow me, like this. You're welcome to make comments and ask me questions. And check out my website, askdryoel.com, my courses are up there. I have two courses. One is on using folate and when it is appropriate for methylation issues and when it is inappropriate and how much to take and what to do if you have a problem taking it. And the other one is more about vitamins in general for anxiety and what testing to do to help you figure out what vitamins might be useful for you. So check those out. They're on my website. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.